The Parent Show on 92.6 FM Radio Verulam.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
And welcome to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6. I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Shirley Heyman.
We are talking tonight about forest schools. It might seem like a bit of an odd topic, but it's something that's really interesting to a lot of parents, isn't it, Shirley?
That's right, yeah. We're going to investigate that subject, something that's in the press and local parents I know are asking about, because there's some sort of popping up around here, you know, around Hertfordshire. And we want to find out, is it really as amazing as people imagine it is, Cathy? Like you were saying, when we hear forest school.
That's right. You think, oh my goodness, they're going to be outside all day. They're going to be having a great time, not in the classroom, not a stuffy environment, but actually enjoying themselves out making fires or, I don't know, gathering sticks. Sounds great.
It does. Is that what you'd like for your children?
I think that it sounds great, but to be in that environment all the time during the school day would be, I've got lots of questions about it. Because one of my questions would be, if the weather is awful, what do they do, you know? And we know that the winter here can last sort of 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So are they really going to be out in the freezing cold? Are they ever indoors?
Yeah,
that's
well, I mean,
one of my main questions.
That's what we're going to find out tonight. I guess they're dressing up in, like, suits, aren't they? Do they walk around with umbrellas? I don't know.
I know. We're going to find out all about it this evening, because we've got some top guests, haven't we?
We have. So please, you know, feel free to email us or contact us on Facebook during the night if you have any questions, because the guests we have tonight are real experts on this subject. So we've got Sara Knight on, who's a real proponent for forest schools. Then we've got Helen Bilton coming on later, who has written a lot of literature and researches into outdoor play. And certainly any teachers listening in will have heard her name. And then, Cathy, who's the third guest we've got?
So we've also got a fantastic chap who's a dad of a child in a forest school, but he also happens to be a trainer in that particular area.
That's right, yeah. Okay, and it's, yeah, forestschoolassociation.org. So, you know, if you want to Google while we're talking, do check that out, forestschoolassociation.org.
92.6 FM.
Now, thank you for joining us back on The Parent Show. We're talking tonight about forest schools, and we are hoping to have our first guest on the phone. Hopefully you're there, Sarah.
I am indeed, Cathy.
Thank you so much for joining us.
That's fine.
There's me and Shirley in the studio, in case you get mixed up with our voices, Sarah, by the way.
Oh, dear, yes. I'll try not to.
It's a bit confusing.
Hi. Are we calling you Sarah or Sarah?
It's Sarah.
Yeah, hi, Sarah. We spoke the other day. So
we did.
Thank you so much for being available tonight to help the parents in Hertfordshire. Sarah, just very basically, you know, what is a forest school? What does the child do, and what age do they have to be to go?
They can be any age. I have published a series of case studies which shows how people are working with children from naught right the way up to adulthood. And obviously if they're very, very young, then they're out with their mums and dads, and it's a collaborative process with the parents and the practitioners, and it's all about experiencing the wild world out there.
Right. So how come they ended up in the UK? You know, where did it all start?
Well, people like to think that it started in the Scandinavia, but I think probably right across Western Europe. Before industrialisation, people lived in and with nature, and it was a harmonious relationship, and people who didn't have as much money as other people perhaps caught rabbits and harvested the good things from the countryside. And then industrialisation came along, and in Britain we lost that contact. But in Scandinavia they didn't. And in 1859, Heinrich Ibsen, the playwright, said, he coined the term Friluftsliv, which Friluftsliv, that's three syllables, and free is fresh, and luft is air, and leave is life. So the fresh air life, something that all Scandinavians are entitled to and enjoy. And indeed, when I worked over there as a young teacher, I worked in Norway, I took three to five-year-olds out, minus 20, rolling in the snow, having a wonderful time in their snowsuits because they've got the right clothes.
Yeah.
Sarah, I was just about to ask you about the weather because obviously I was going to say, but it's very cold here during the winter. You've obviously, you know, turned my point around because you're saying children are more than happy to sort of play in those conditions.
Children are. It's the adults that moan. There's no such thing as bad weather. There's only bad clothing.
And Sarah, were these private or state schools on the whole globally?
In Scandinavia, it's all state.
Wow. Okay. And do they form a sort of a large proportion of the schools there or a small proportion?
Children can opt before their formal schooling, or their parents can, as to how much of their time they want to spend outside. So they can have, there are one or two, a few, a sprinkling, I suppose, probably about 30% of the daycare settings when children spend the whole of their time outside. But the majority will spend about 50% of their time outside.
So what sort of kind of things do they have to go back inside for? What can't you do outside, in your opinion, Sarah?
Absolutely nothing you can't do outside.
Really?
Yes.
What about going to the toilet?
Oh, no problem.
Oh.
That's one of the things you have to learn to master when you take a group out to do forest school. It depends if you're going to the same patch of woodland week after week with lots and lots of children. If you do, then you need a composting toilet. If it's a one-off visit, then you take a spade.
Oh.
Hmm.
And I have to tell you, the little boys think it's wonderful.
I know. I'm always telling mine off for doing that in the garden.
It takes 2 or 3 weeks for them to get over the novelty value.
Yeah.
Little girls tend not to go.
Right.
They tend to learn self-control.
Mm.
But most small children, the average forest school sessions will be 2 or 3 hours. You take them to the toilet before you go, and when you get back, they go again. Most will not need to go while they're out. The odd one or two will, but you can accommodate that.
Okay, so we're saying that in the UK, it's unlikely the child would be out all day in a forest school. Yeah. Okay, that clears up some questions we'd had.
Yeah.
Do you think it's true, I read, that a forest school could be less stressful for the child than the traditional UK classroom we have today?
Most definitely.
Okay, please tell us why.
Children outside in a forest school setting, now, of course, they can be outside doing a whole variety of different things, so I am talking specifically about forest school here. They will be encouraged to be self-motivated and to lead on the activities. So their time is less restricted. So there's time to explore and time to get into deep play.
Mm-hmm.
And parents will know what deep play looks like. You know when your child, you know, that sort of heavy breathing that they go in for when they're really engaged
right.
in something. And that's so de-stressing. And I've got a quote on our website, and it just says from one little boy, he says here, "When I'm out in the forest, I don't have ADHD.
Oh,
wow. I think one of the things that's going through my mind, Sarah, is that, you know, it's all very well that they all love being in the forest and they enjoy it, but later on in life they're going to have to sit somewhere in an office perhaps or in a school setting that's a much more structured, in which case you're sort of setting them up for circumstances that will be difficult ultimately.
I don't think so. Certainly not the experience in Scandinavia and Germany. If you look at their teenagers, they're actually quite capable of studying for long periods of time. And when they do go into formal education, which tends to be later than our children, it's usually around 7 or 8, they have no problem sitting still because they've had the opportunity to lay the foundations of their social and emotional development in a relaxed way.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
They've got those foundations to draw on.
So do you think there's a difference, a major difference, between the kind of thing you want to share with people and you've written books on, as compared to the outdoor learning that all of us as parents are told our children are doing now in schools in the UK?
I think it all has a place.
Okay.
It's just different. And I think there's a certain period that children encounter naturally when they're developing. Probably the ideal age is 3 to 5. when forest school has a real benefit to their learning.
Okay.
It may be that if they've had a bad experience in their early learning, they'll need to come back to it later. Mm. And I have case studies where it's had a real benefit in a remedial sense. Mm. Where children's experiences are not being good, or they have learning difficulties, or even as adults, some wonderful work's been done with recovering drug addicts using forest school as a therapy. But, I think all kinds of outdoor learning are good. It's just that different periods in children's life journey and different times in their experience, different ones work best.
So it may be that dipping in and out of forest education might be optimal for some children.
That would be wonderful, particularly with children who are finding formal learning a little bit challenging. It would give them the resilience and the strength to draw on when they go back in their settings. One head teacher that I've worked with fairly recently, she set up quite unintentionally an experiment because she had a dual entry reception class, and at the time she could only afford to send one group for forest school. And she was telling me that even in year three she could see which group had done forest school and which group hadn't because of their social skills.
That's
I can imagine, because they're spending so much more time interacting.
Yes, and their language develops and their team working skills develop.
And courage, I'm wondering about. I bet that develops, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
One little girl I took out, she desperately, desperately wanted to walk along a log without, balance along a log without having her hand held.
Yeah.
Took us about 6 weeks, but we got there.
Excellent. Now, one of the questions that some of the parents had been asking me to ask you is, how do you stop the children just running off into the forest?
They probably will.
Oh. So how do you get them back?
They will come back.
You get a big whistle.
They will come back.
Really?
Yeah, they are pre-programmed to. No young child on the who hasn't had something awful happen in their lives will run away and hide from an adult for a prolonged period of time. If they know that you're not going to chase them, because that's a game, and what you're doing is far more interesting than what they're doing, they're not actually going to go out of earshot. And as soon as you demonstrate that what you're doing is more interesting, they're going to creep back. I had that happen with a group from a nurture group in Suffolk. And a nurture group is where they're addressing children's experiences where they've gone very badly wrong.
Yeah.
And these were sort of 8 and 9 year olds. And we were working on ratios of 1-to-1 with the children. And we took them out into the woods. And we were allowed by the Forestry Commission to take our cars right up into the woods. And we opened the car doors and they just shot off. And my colleague went, "Aah!" And I said, no, it's all right, don't worry. So at the camp.
So you have to be a very calm person to take those children into the woods.
You have to know about child development. That's part of the training.
Right, okay.
That's why you want trained practitioners. They've got to have the training in child development. They've got to have the training in bushcraft. They've got to have the training in health and safety. Mm-hmm. It's that unique combination you need to put together to make a forest school practice.
Sarah, what about the long-term outcomes for children who attend forest school as opposed to, you know, your traditional state or independent school even in Britain? Is there any sort of longitudinal data on how children are performing later in life?
We're working on it.
Oh.
This is work in progress.
Oh, good.
I'm working with Sue Waite from Plymouth University, who's a very experienced researcher, and I've done some research myself. But, of course, this has only been in this country, right across the country, for since 2000, 2001, 2003. You know, we're only talking about something that's really relatively new, so we don't have the longitudinal data yet, but we are collecting it.
Great.
And we are hoping to show that what we're seeing in short-term outcomes in terms of confidence, motivation, well-being, these are things that will be sustained over time.
And just finally then, Sarah, where do you think our listeners are best to go if they want to find out about local forest school kind of provision?
You have a very good centre. Now, is it called Bourne End?
There is somewhere called Bourne End near here, yeah.
Bourne End Run Forest School.
In Hemel Hempstead?
Yep.
Okay.
So if you get in touch with them, they're bound to know where the other groups are that are local to your parents.
Okay, thank you.
And Sarah, one last question that's come in on email.
Yep.
Can parents do the training?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so it's not just for teachers, but actually parents. That's fantastic.
Usually with a group of people that you're training, you'll have about 50% will either be teachers or early years practitioners. And about 25% will be outdoor people, you know, rangers or something like that.
Yeah.
And then 25% will be a whole range of other people who are just fascinated by it. And the thing is, you're each sharing your own strengths and or what you're bringing to the show.
Sarah, thank you so much. You've really cleared up some of the things, you know, Kathy and I have been chatting about, and certainly parents around here are asking. So thank you for your time.
Well, I just hope to see it spreading.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right.
All the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye night.
The community's voice. We're Radio Verulam.
Hopefully we've got on the line an absolute guru in outdoor play. We're really, really thrilled to have you on the show, Helen. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
I think to anyone who works in education, Shirley and I both do in sort of different ways. Your name is very, very familiar, so thanks so much for
taking you, Helen.
The time. Helen, just for our listeners, can you just explain what your expertise is in when it comes to educating young children in this country?
Yes, I'm an early years teacher, and I suppose what's particularly close to my heart is that I was trained by early years tutors, and my first my main tutor was an expert in outdoor play and outdoor learning, or we used to call it the nursery garden then. So my love started then and has just carried on for the last X number of years, and now I'm an associate professor at the University of Reading, and I train people to be teachers, early years and primary, and I continue to research and study and write books on the subject.
And obviously most of our listeners are parents this evening, and they've got some quite straightforward questions for you that they're really curious about.
Okay.
One of the things they want to know is, do children actually think they're working or playing when they spend a lot of their time outside, you know, for the school day?
Frebel says that children's play is their kind of, they see it as their work, I suppose. And so they just think they're doing, and if you want to call it playing, yes, that's fine. Work for them can be something that's quite arduous. And so when they move to, say, Key Stage 1 from an early years setting, they will very quickly say, I'm not playing anymore, I'm working. So they make a division like that. Because it changes, but generally they just think, yeah, they're playing, but it's their work, I suppose.
So, Helen, you know, if we move on to, you know, we're talking about forest schools tonight. What do you think is the difference between what you do and you lecture about and teach about, you know, outdoor learning, and forest schools as people are sort of understanding it?
So this kind of difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is there a difference?
Yes. Outdoor learning, to me, is a holistic kind of approach covering all subjects, all needs.
Yeah.
To me, forest school, I like the approach, I like the ethos, but it's an approach, and it's part of outdoor learning. It's not the totality. And it doesn't actually proclaim to teach the whole curriculum if you read what they say. And I suppose we have a strong tradition of nursery education in this country starting in 1916, and I have a little anxiety about something like forest schools. I like it, it's fine, but it can be a kind of bandwagon that some people kind of jump on.
Right.
Along with, I've seen this with Highscope, Steiner, Montessori, where you've got people who may not be completely secure in early years education, who take the tag but don't run it as they kind of should do. And I also really, really strongly believe that young people who are the you've got them at the foundation of their lives, that we need really good early years teachers trained by early years tutors so that they really, really know what they're doing.
So I suppose it's like everything, you know, lots of parents see the label on a school, it's advertised as a Steiner or a Montessori, but you're saying sometimes aspects of that philosophy are taken ahead rather than the whole, it's not a whole school approach.
Yeah, that is my concern, and that's what I've seen. And I think there are some good Forest schools, as there are some good Montessori and Steiner, etc. But I think you have to be very secure and expert in early years education, firstly.
Mm. For parents, how do they know that when they visit a setting that if they're, you know, what they're getting, if it's explained in the title that it's a forest school, or can you ask, or is it just aspects of the curriculum spent outside, or how do we know what we're sort of getting?
I think you've got to talk to the staff, and you've got to find out if they're, you know, are they looking at cognitive, linguistic, emotional, social, physical needs. Yes, in good outdoor, in good early years settings, what I find sort of offensive almost is that people say, oh, you like outdoors and you do outdoor learning, and therefore there's this assumption made that I have nothing to do with the basics of literacy, numeracy, science, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, for me, with outdoor learning, speaking and listening is the bedrock of language development. If I don't get that right, I can't do anything else. So, in a forest, I suppose you've got to ask the staff what they're doing and how they're doing it, and try and find out if they're covering all aspects of the curriculum. That's the main thing, because for all children. If you're going to ask me a question about boys and girls, which you might do, I do think the curriculum is for everybody, and for outside, it's for everybody.
I mean, one of my experiences over the years has been that, you know, some practitioners or teachers, as soon as it starts to rain, you know, they're worried about their hair, they put their hood up, they want to get inside. You know, what would you say that you're teaching the new generation of teachers about outdoor learning, you know, for the adult?
Well, I have to, there are some staff like that, I agree, yeah, and they aren't good early years practitioners, no way, and a good early years practitioner knows that they've got two environments, they've got one in, one out, the two make a whole, they work with the two, and I can think of some great teachers and superb teachers, and I just written another book, and I've got those practitioners that I watch and that are just amazed by in it to show that it can be done. You know, and even if it's raining, I mean, if it's absolutely teeming down, you just use logic. It's appropriate to go out in or not.
Yeah.
And as long as you've got the right gear on, you'll be fine. Yeah.
So what would you kind of advise, or could you help our local parents if they're going to look around at, you know, nurseries and infant schools, junior schools for their children? What kind of outdoor equipment should they be hoping to see? Or, you know, it seems wherever I go now, people have covered shelters for children to play under. But, you know, what would you say would constitute a really good quality outdoor learning environment for children?
Can I say what it wouldn't be?
Yeah, okay, go on then. Say what it wouldn't be.
What it wouldn't be is a ton of brightly coloured plastic. I find it so offensive.
Yeah.
So they're small, therefore they must be idiots. So therefore they need the three primary colours to interest them. And I just find that daft. So no plastic, really.
Right.
You'd have lots of materials like... It's ever so easy to do in your own garden. It's actually reasonably cheap. You'd have material, you'd have blocks, you'd have boxes, you'd have ropes, you'd have carpet squares, you'd have logs, and a lot of, you know, the lovely thing about forest schools is it is the natural environment.
Yes.
And that's, you know, it's teeming with science. So that's the kind of thing I would be looking for. You might have things like trestles or A-frames. You don't necessarily need a massive great climbing frame. They can be more of an issue and cause, the research I've done, cause poor behaviour. Very, very interestingly, than give you much back from it. So that's the kind of, and you'd want some shelter, yes, but you'd need shrubbery to, you know, make little quiet areas that where children can be away from other people. I don't think children these days have that opportunity as much as they used to.
And as a parent, Helen, you know, you recognise that your children naturally want to be outside. They build things naturally. They play with sticks naturally. You know, we sort of force them to, we put toys in their hand when actually they're perfectly happy making do in the garden, playing with a watering can. So I think,
absolutely.
I think children are always instinctively, you know, happy in that environment, aren't they?
Yeah. And yes, and part of your role, if when they're very young, but then if they come to your nursery, early years foundation setting, and they're not used to playing, is to almost show them how to play, and just to start collecting the leaves or sweeping the leaves or, you know, building something, and they then join you and they start to mimic and see, you know, and they get sort of this game of playing. Because you do get children now who come to school, come to early years, who don't know how to play.
Let's move on, Helen. Like you hinted, we'd really like to ask you about that age-old debate of boys and girls. So which one of those sexes benefits from playing outside more?
This is a bit of an issue for me, and okay. I'm doing quite a lot of research on this, actually. Boys and girls are different, yep. I fully concur.
You acknowledge that, yeah.
I acknowledge that, yeah. Yep. But, and this is a fairly important but for me, they have the same needs. They have physical needs, linguistic, cognitive, social, emotional. And boys and girls need fresh air and exercise and light. And girls and boys need the freedom and opportunity to climb and run and shout and build. And it worries me that some people kind of think, well, there's one environment for one gender. I think it's ridiculous. And I also think it's quite dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Would I say that some children prefer outside, maybe benefit more outside, yes, from the approach. But what I'd really, really like to see is more girls being encouraged to go outside and to be assertive and strong outside.
Mm.
So this the real worry for me is about going, saying, oh, it's just for boys, oh, you know, boys will be boys and all of that sort of stuff, is that you're then, half the population is almost dismissed from outside. So I think it's for everybody.
Okay, great. Well, I think you're right. Parents assume maybe boys enjoy it more.
Mm.
And that's not the correct approach.
No.
And have you got any fine... I mean, you've got such a wealth of knowledge, Helen. What would be your main tips for parents to help them make the most of the outdoor environment for children?
Well, first of all, have the right gear. Just have the right appropriate... clothing. I would say go out every day. Anything that you do regularly, it just becomes part of your life.
Yeah.
I think you've got to enjoy it, and it's a bit, you know, maybe you as a parent aren't that keen on it, but you don't have the right to kind of condemn your child to your view. So, you know, you've got to, you know, it is part of life outside. I would point out all the time anything and everything, the clouds, the movement of the leaves, you know, note the colours, the smells, the textures, you know, just that's something that people aren't doing as much as they used to. And these terrible buggies where the child is pointing outwards are really militating against conversation. You must have the child facing you so that you can talk to them and they can watch you talking and you can then point to everything that's kind of going on around you. Don't have the plastic. Walk as much as possible. You know, take them where there's trees. Yeah, and the other thing I'd say to parents, and I've done quite a lot of work with parents, the carpet. If you've got small children, the garden is not a showcase. This is, just forget it, all right? You know, you've got to have all that stuff I mentioned out there. They're not going to be young for long.
Yeah.
You can start, you know, your rose beds and your dahlias and your showcasing at the local horticultural society, but in a few years.
That's very good advice. Yeah. I'm just thinking about my garden. It's currently covered in old carpet, all the things you said, damp cardboard boxes.
There you go.
Yeah, so
perfect.
Everything's perfect. Listen, thanks so much, Helen.
Thank you, Helen.
You're welcome.
All the very best.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, that was fantastic. We've had two experts on forest education tonight. And it's not the end of the chat, is it, Shirley?
No, because we're going to speak to a dad who's put put his daughter into a forest school. So we're going to get the inside story, I hope.
Brilliant. So join us after this very short break.
Family life has its ups and downs, and at Neave's Solicitors, we're here to help with all your legal matters. Whatever your circumstances, we know how to handle even the most delicate situations. Our experienced family law specialists offer friendly, sympathetic advice on everything from trust funds to property, from partnership breakdown to wills and probate. To arrange a free consultation, visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave's Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Now, hopefully we have got our next guest on the line. Paul, are you there?
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your programme.
Now, Paul, you're a forest school practitioner, a trainer and a parent.
Yeah, the whole shebang, really, absolutely.
So, Paul, why do you send your three-year-old daughter to forest school?
It's because of what it's trying to do. It was really interesting listening to Sarah and to Helen. I mean, they picked on some really important points. I was out this last winter, it was probably about minus seven or so, in the snow with my daughter, who was just turned three at the time. And she's learning about, you know, fire lighting, and we were tracking deer and all these kind of things. I mean, I come from a background of the outdoors, expeditions, the Arctic and all kinds of things. But when I'm doing these kind of things with my daughter or with other children, it's not about the skills themselves. What they are is a context for learning. So there's two particular elements, really, that I think parents are particularly interested in. So the first is, what's it actually doing for the children? Yes, they're learning fire, and yes, they're learning about knife skills, but we're not really looking to turn them into little Ray Mears, or even Bear Grylls, to that
point.
What we're looking at is, what is it doing to their character? What is it doing for their well-being and their resilience? So when I'm, you know, with my child exploring firelighting, it's, what is this going to do for the rest of her life? That's really ultimately the context we're thinking of. And that's why before a school, it's about these long-term programs. It's about your observations, and exactly like Helen was saying as well, that, you know, your practitioners have got to be trained, qualified, professional. They've got to really know all of their pedagogy and their learning theories. They've got to have a really robust system of observation, review, reflection. There are all these elements to it that's about bringing the best out of those experiences.
So I was going to ask you, but I don't want to ask it now. What are the skills that your daughter's developed? So I'm going to ask you, what kind of, you know, characteristics and dispositions then do you see in her already from having this experience?
One of the things that constantly gets kind of fed back to us, and it does sound like I'm a gloating parent now, but is the amount of empathy that she shows.
Ah.
So, I mean, she's fantastic out in the garden. She will look after bugs. She will look after, you know, where they're living. She will go and take care of them, move them out of the rain even. And a sense of resilience as well, that she will have a go and she knows it's okay to fail and she'll have a go again. So it is about all of those elements and about what it's doing in terms of their identity. And then the other big aspect as well is, obviously, it's in nature. Nature is a phenomenal, phenomenal canvas for us. So it's got all of these things we can do, all of these things we can use that can inspire ideas. And so it is also about, obviously, the nature. And, you know, we have got some issues that we need to look at, you know, as a society, as communities, in terms of sustainability. And unless children get regular opportunities to be out in nature, why on earth should they really care about it? You know, that's an honest, you know, question of, unless they've got really something in their heart, we can tell them and tell them until we're blue in the face, but really, are they going to care? And it's only really when you do have this, it's bringing nature back into our cultural identity, which is something that has been lost, as Sarah was saying earlier on. You know, this used to be kind of every day. This was nothing special.
Yeah.
And still people sort of say, well, isn't that what I was doing when I was 12? And a big part of the answer is, well, yeah, but there are all these extra elements on it now. It's a professional field where we can get so much more out of it for the children. That, you know, some of it would have been there anyway, but there's so much more now because we have all these structures. And it is applying the whole approach of, you know, what they do in the classroom. It's really trying to understand who these people are and what can we do with them.
And Paul, would you argue that there may be more of an impetus? I think you've referred to this, given the sort of conditions that our children are often in. For example, in primary school now, you know, they're crammed into small classrooms, 30 plus children. There's that you feel intuitively as a parent that after school they need to be in the fresh air, they need to be in the park. You sort of, I think it's becoming sort of, I think it's why forest schools, would you agree, have sort of come to the fore a little bit more in this country?
I think so, yeah. I think, yeah, forest school has been seen as a sort of antidote, but I think what's underlying all of the questions is, you know, what are we trying to accomplish with education? Is it about helping these little people become big people that can get jobs? In which case, there's lots of discussions and debate about how successfully it does that. If this is about education having a role in forming the next generation and who's going to take ownership of our societies, then there's even bigger questions there. So I think it's a larger question that Forest Schools is addressing with sustainability as well, and where nature sits in terms of our own relationship to it. I mean, there's so much. We're such an amazing time at the moment. There's so much research. Part of my job as a trainer is I have to sit and have my head in a lot of biomedical databases to really pull out. I mean, there's stuff coming from Japan at the minute, there's stuff from America, and it's showing us that there's biological benefits to the kind of experiences that we give in forest school. Just by having a more relaxed environment, it changes the brain chemistry and it changes the whole myelination process.
Paul, one of the things going through my mind is how you separate out the fact you're obviously a very engaged, loving, involved dad. With, you know, spending that time with your daughter, really, doesn't matter where it is, it's going to have an impact on her levels of resilience, on her, how articulate she is, etc. Is it really about the forest environment, or is it more about the quality of your relationship and just spending time?
I think it's about both. I mean, fatherhood for me is something I'm incredibly passionate about. You know, I would say there's massive support there, really explicit support for mothers, but for fathers, there doesn't really seem to be that much. And, you know, I've been involved with a couple of little projects to try and highlight that. But I think fathers being involved with forest school, it's an access for fathers as well, because schools can feel really alien. You know, for a dad to go in to a school, it can feel quite alienating.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And so forest schools are a nice, easier access for fathers there. But the forest has such an integral, so many different opportunities that are in there that aren't in any kind of other environment to such an extent. I've got to be the first person to say that I wouldn't want my daughter to just be outside always and feral. What I'm looking for is a balance. I want all the opportunities that are there, you know, spending time inside talking and doing things there, going outside and doing this and the other. It's about embellishing what fantastic opportunities are already there in school and nurseries, but with something that's really crucial, because, again, it's when we start to look at high school and when they're trying to actually accomplish something in terms of getting qualifications, what we're looking at is, well, we invest in the learner can invest in the learning. And it's not until we've really spent time making sure that person is resilient, patient, able to work with others, get over problems, all of those elements, that we can be sure we've put them in the best position to learn various subjects and to accomplish exams and go on and get a job, etc.
Paul, thank you. I love that phrase you use. You know, can you say it once more for us about investing in the learner?
If you invest in the learner, then the learner can invest in the learning.
Excellent. Can you paint a picture for us, you know, a sort of memory of working in a forest school, either with your daughter or someone else's child? Just, you know, make us feel like it's the thing we want to do for our children.
I think one of the overall senses, because I get asked this a lot, is what's my favourite time when I've been doing forest schools? And I've worked with newborns right up to 18, 19-year-olds that, let's say, have records other than by Bob Dylan. So the forest school approach is working for all kinds of age groups and all kinds of circumstances. But for me, my absolute favourite time is when I realise they don't need me. It's when I can perhaps go and have a sneaky little nap behind the tree for 10 minutes. Not that it would. But because what that means is we've got to a point where they're confident in themselves, they're confident with each other, they're confident in this environment and what they can do. They understand that it's about a culture of experimentation and trying something and experience something rather than waiting to be told. But then they're confident in our relationship, that they know that that's why I'm there. I'm there to support them and not take over and let them make those mistakes, because that's okay.
Paul, we've got a quick question from someone who's emailed in. Tell us about any disasters you've had in the woods when you're having a nap. Did any of them light a fire and set the forest? Has there been any awkward moments?
No, absolutely. And that's not to say that there will never be any. Every single provision, you know, there are areas where there are sort of concerns and things you need to be aware of. But yes, I've had I've been using tools with 3-year-olds, fire with my daughter, you know, all kinds of various things. And I don't say that to be sensationalist. What I mean is, when you have people that are properly trained, when they are very, very familiar, going back to what Helen and Sarah were talking about, when they're very, very familiar with that environment, with all of the skills, you know, when they're working at a really, really high level, then they can predict what's going to happen because they've done it. They've made all the mistakes already, so the children don't have to make some of those.
So where can our listeners go then if they want to find out more about this, you know, outdoor forest school learning environment? What would you recommend?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.forestschools.com. And they can find out more about the training. What's really interesting is it coming here, and I don't know whether it's just our mentality in this country, but we've really analysed it, and now we're doing sorts all over the world. I'm actually flying off to New Zealand tomorrow to go and do some training over there for people.
Wow.
Excellent. So we've almost taken the ideas, we've played with them, and now we're being the inspiration for a whole bunch of different countries now.
Oh, that's exciting. Great.
Well, listen, thanks for joining us so much, Paul.
Yeah.
And also thank you as well. I'm sure it's such a privilege, isn't it, to have had so many experts on the show tonight, Helen and also Sarah.
Mm.
So thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
92.6 FM.
But Shirley, it was a great show tonight, wasn't it? We learned a lot about forest education.
Yeah, I think I understand so much more now. And I think what I got from it, Kathy, was you don't have to do it full time, you know, from 8 in the morning till 6 at night.
Yeah.
Which is what was worrying me. That's why I wouldn't want to do it as a parent or a teacher. But anyway, so we spoke to Sarah Knight, and we spoke to Helen Bilton, and to Paul Mosley, and we're grateful to all of them. And please do, you know, contact us on Facebook or our website if there's anything that, you know, came up for you tonight or you want to know more.
Neves Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neves includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neves Solicitors, your complete legal solution.